It's part of the code. The boneheads don't kill the other boneheads.
Damn it, Mike. That's...
Okay, I seem to have broken Dre with
pirate,
that interjection.
Pirate Bimbari. Oh, my God.
I should have put more British spin on it. There weren't pirates on the pirates, eh, Irv?
All right, I lost it.
You kind of sound like O'Brien now, or not one O'Brien in this episode. Yeah. And Dave's just, what the hell am I doing?
You gotta check this out. Was our last best hope for podcasting. It failed. But in the wake of Babylon 5 haters everywhere, it became something greater. Our last best hope for sharing key episodes from a seminal 90s sci-fi show for victory. The year is 2025. The podcast, you gotta check this out.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. And Mike, I went off script. I went off target. I broke the thesis, but it was worth it. We have a very special guest as we continue our Babylon 5 Season 3. Again, the premise of the show, you gotta check this out. Babylon 5, a seminal sci-fi show. Many of you may have missed Season 3, one of the best seasons of television out there, according to some sci-fi nerds. And we got a special guest, Mike, for the worst rated episode, not just of the season, of the show. And by the way, just in case, Mike, because I didn't introduce you properly, this is Mike Slater, amazing musician, Slatron most places on the internet. Okay, Mike, there's your introduction. You can go with our guest.
Wow, I'm honored. I think that's the first time you actually gave an introduction to me as opposed to going right to the guest.
I say your name so much, Mike. What, that is an introduction.
So today, yeah, you've gone way off book for this because usually we take a key episode from the series to take people through all of Babylon 5, which was written like a 5-season novel, and we take the key episodes that move the plot forward. This episode is well known as one of the worst episodes of the series, and we thought, what better way to have one of our most known guests in the podcast world? Today we have David Christopher Bell, formerly of Cracked and currently of
Gainfully Unemployed. Some more news, a bunch of stuff we don't know about, which, you know, regular appearance on Small Beans, love that. And then I will note that on Small Beans you routinely talk and say other stuff's in the works, and that's the business you're in, Dave, where you can't always share what is going on, but, you know, 5 years from now, we will know even more stuff that you've been working on outside of that resume, which I think already fills 100 hours of the week.
Right. Yeah, a lot of stuff with the CIA. Did you say seminal? Is it seminal? The show is seminal?
Why not?
I think, yeah, it's one of the words you usually word is seminal. I don't think I've called you out on that one yet.
Did I use the pronunciation wrong or what?
No, I just didn't think of Babylon 5 as a seminal show. I'm sorry.
We're going to stay here for a bit. So one of the definitions, the third one, it's worth noting the first two are related to semen, so that's good, right, which makes sense, but highly influential in an original way. A key point about this, and one of the reasons I wanted you to be on the show, Dave, is Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine is one of the most known rivalries in sci-fi. And I want to stress, this is like a Rafael Nadal, Andy Roddick, Magnus Carlsen, Hikaru Nakamura, those references land with everybody, right? Rivalry where it's very one-sided. Star Trek is Star Trek. Babylon 5 at its peak was, you know, a cult show. The showrunner, J. Michael Straczynski, pitched this big Bible, a 5-year arc, and Paramount stole it, basically, and made Deep Space Nine. So yes, I would say seminal holds because JMS, both for Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, introduced a lot of things. And it is argued that the idea of a multi-year arc on TV had not been done really before this.
Okay. You mean the idea of sort of not having to do just like a, you know, story of the week type of stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's definitely what I think of Deep Space Nine, is sort of being one of the first ones that did that. And then, of course, obviously, once HBO started coming out with stuff, like, that just became the norm for TV until today. But that's cool to know. Yeah, I know nothing about Babylon 5. I know this was the first episode I ever watched.
Yeah, it was like HBO TV before HBO came along is the perfect way to set it, because JMS had the 5-season arc ahead already before he started. And then it was a lot of getting through the problems of producing television at the time. How do you get the actors to stay on for 5 seasons? How do you have a network agree to get you to do something that's, you know, meant for syndication, for people to watch random episodes for the time, which is, I think, a big reason why Star Trek held up more over the years over Babylon 5. You cannot watch Babylon 5 unless you do it from start to finish.
The first topic I'll throw out my segment of your conflict, why the hell is Dave here? And I'm going to say two reasons. So the first is Babylon 5, Deep Space Nine. You are a well-known Deep Space Nine fan. You and Hannah Michaels routinely talk about it. In fact, we even had on one of our related shows, Jeff Has Cool Cards. Hannah showed up to break some Deep Space Nine cards and got an awesome autograph. And spoiler alert, Dave, if your time allows, Jeff does have his hands on some Babylon 5 cards with autographs in them. So, and we do thank you gifts around here. So those are out there, just as an FYI. You're a Deep Space Nine fan. We're Babylon 5. I've never seen all of Deep Space Nine. I don't think I've seen a complete episode. And so with that in mind, I'm proud of this. I think I can quantify this.
Okay.
You are the only person in the world that has seen the entirety of this episode as their first Babylon 5 episode that is not absolutely insane. I cannot buy a single person starting this episode on cable or whatever, even in the eras of what else is on, and watching the entire thing start to finish.
I think that's correct. I think you're probably right about that. There's something historic here, and that's special, right?
I guess I would put the question as, if you were just finding Gray 17 is missing randomly on cable, how far do you think you would have gotten into the episode before stopping it?
Oh, not like, far at all.
Probably wouldn't even gotten to Robert England's part at that point because he doesn't come in until the last 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. If I'm at a hotel and there's nothing else on, then throw this on and do other things. But full attention, if I had sat and watched this full attention, I think it would be off in 10 minutes or so.
On that point, I'm a huge Marvel fan. And one of my favorite things that anybody said about the MCU and why they didn't do well was you, David. You said they kept making an offer like after Endgame and then pulling it back. And then they'd make another offer and then pull it back. And that's kind of how I saw this entire episode, because they keep making offers all over the place and they don't seem to follow up on much of anything, and they keep making new offers as it goes on until the episode just ends.
I had no context for any of this, so I don't know how this stacks up to other Babylon 5 episodes. I don't really know what's normal and what's not for these characters either. So there's like certain things in it, like the monster at the end. At the end, he sort of says, I encountered a blank. And it seemed like it was like, oh, so that's a type of monster that he's seen before. Like, it's hard at context because it's like, if I watch this as a representation of Babylon 5, my assumption is that it's a very bad show. And so, and it's hard to know what makes this, I guess, bad compared to other episodes versus something that is just the cheesiness of a show from this era, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like, especially for Babylon 5, that's part of this whole experiment, is we're tossing people in the middle of this show that's meant to be watched and answering questions as they go to see how they go into things. And that's why when Dre picked this episode for you, I was like, what the hell are we doing?
The wise thing to do would have been to send you like an overview. Here's where we're at. And we do have that. We have this amazing show, right, Mike? You better check this out. Where if you listened in order, there are 10 previous episodes you could listen to get yourself caught up on Babylon 5 to where we are now, which is episode 19 of season 3. I love that you went in blind, Dave. That is so amazing. Because just a little context. Last episode we recorded for this network was War Without an End. But right after that, which is probably considered some of the best TV, I would say at the time, and then of Babylon 5, we get two of the weaker episodes that actually are like a one and two parter. So I'll get the recap, Mike, if you want to do the music.
Previously on Babylon 5.
So we just finished War Without an End. If you're listening to, you got to check this out. We have two episodes. We only have one episode in between that and this day, which is atypical for us, but we've explained bad horror mixes with movie night. Only time in history this has ever happened. So I'm actually quite proud of that. Episode before this is Walkabout. And this, like I said, this is kind of a first-parter because Lita Alexander, redhead on the show, much like Beverly Crusher, who was written off early and managed to just come back as if nothing has happened, She's a telepath. She returns. We find out that Kosh, one of our Vorlons, has died, a big deal. And they, I don't think it shows up a little, like in the background, but we talk about the shadows this episode. So the shadows are the big bad that they're fighting, and they don't know how to beat them. And they go, wait, telepaths can beat shadows. So they go out on an expedition with Leda, and Leda is able to use her telepathic powers to stop a shadow vessel, and they win, and it is awesome. And then on the flip side, we have Franklin, our doctor, which you may have caught, Dave, has a stim addiction. He played it pretty subtle this episode about his addiction. I think it went under the radar. That's sarcasm for those listening before we get to that part. He has a stim addiction. He says he's doing walkabout, where he's just going to walk up and down the station until he finds himself with a made-up religion, which, true story, J. Michael Straczynski has used in multiple things, including Superman, this concept of walkabout. A character just saying, hey, I'm having a mental problem. I'm just going to walk until I'm over my problem. So Franklin is out just walking around the station. He meets up with a singer who is way too good to be on Babylon 5. They hook up, and then he thinks she is an addict. He's like, I can't be in this. And it turns out he was wrong. She needs the medicine because she's a terminal patient. It's there. It doesn't relate a ton, but it's the reason I said it's kind of a part one heading into this episode is our doctor, who knows a bunch of stuff, is out and about doing his own thing. And the shadows are weak to telepaths. That leads us into Gray 17 is missing. And the other thing where I was mentioning the war without an end, the Cisco character that we wrapped up, Sinclair, he was the leader of a major organization of Minbari, the boneheaded people, and Earthers that are fighting the shadows. And because he disappeared for some reason, no major spoilers, go listen to the war without an end episode if you haven't heard people, they have to have a new leader. And Delenn is the obvious choice, but the issue is she's religious. We've got warrior. So there's warrior, religious, worker. There's a caste system in the Minbari. And can you have a religious person inside in charge of a warrior? That's what's coming up in this episode. So that gives us kind of the full context leading into this episode. Dave, since you mentioned, I got to ask one other follow-up question. You didn't cancel on us, which you could have. That would have been within your right. I would have understood. Any follow-up when you finished watching?
Like looking into the show, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. No.
I love this. This is great.
This is okay. The follow-up right here.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of assumed if it was, it would be put more into context. I mean, the vibe I got was that this felt like and this is very Deep Space Nine. It's less Star Trek, which is like when you have this serialized show, you have sort of this story maintenance you got to do, where sometimes they want to have a bottle episode within that. So that's what this struck me as, is that they had an idea for kind of a bottle episode of this, a very common kind of like a haunted hotel type thing, like a missing floor, which is a cool story concept in general. It seemed like they had that, but then they had a bunch of story maintenance. And, you know, my eyes sort of glazed over for the story maintenance because I'm like, okay, these guys are like these dinosaur bonehead people. They're like Klingons. They have an honor thing going on. They fight. And all that stuff was like, you know, like sort of shit that I knew that I was seeing the middle of something. And so I couldn't even try to understand it fully because I'm not sure what these people's relationships are or anything like that. But it definitely clearly was like, okay, this is something in progress versus this weird story about this person finding this floor, which was, again, a broadly neat idea for something that seems like this is like a space station more than a spaceship, but it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere.
Yeah,
and again, I don't know how weird it is that there'd be these people on this floor. I don't know how occupied this space station is or anything like that. But yeah, that's all to say that I sort of knew that I wasn't going to understand that the ongoing story. So cool. I didn't really try.
Well, Dave, speaking of understanding the story, before we get into the plot, we always have a quiz for our guests. So are you ready for the Talia Winters memory quiz?
Sure.
All right. This is on our current episode of Babylon 5, Gray 17 is Missing, to see how well Dave paid attention to the show.
I'm going to fail this quiz.
Cool. First category, there's five questions, is how to get hacked in space. What is Franklin's password for the Narn Underground Railroad files? It was a quite on-the-nose reference to a historical person.
Is this not multiple choice?
I can make it multiple choice.
Yeah, that would help.
It's going to be...
I got to give you props, Dave. You are the first person on the quiz that has been like, actually ask for help. So I'm going to give, that's a bonus point right there for me, Mike.
One sure. point already for asking for help. Yeah, usually I've offered multiple choice and I get turned down. Is the name Karen? Is it Jenny? Is it Harriet? Or is it Aaron?
Well, you said it was probably related to the Underground Railroad thing, so I'm guessing Harriet.
Harriet is correct. Two nice. Clues is all you needed for that one. All right, next question. This category is nerd numbers. How many levels are in the original blueprints for Gray Sector?
30.
Yes, easy one, because they left the one off. Big plot point here. All right, next question. The category is Freddy versus Garibaldi. In Jeremiah's first line of dialogue, what body part does he ask Garibaldi to consider?
What body part? I don't even know who these people you're referencing are.
Jeremiah is the Freddy Krueger. He's Robert Englund's character.
Okay.
He holds up this body part and...
Oh, the hand.
The hand, of course.
I remember that, yeah.
All right, next category. Name that monster. What's the name of the booger monster that's running around Gray 17?
I might have written it down. Hold on.
Give you a hint is that it's very close to a StarCraft II monster.
That's not going to help me. It was something dumb. It was like a Gorg or something like that, but I don't know.
Very close. It's the Zarg.
Zarg, yeah.
You got two letters. I'll do that to you, yeah.
Yeah, we'll give it to you, two letters. All right, last question. This is Pigs in Space. What Earth police force was Garibaldi's grandmother on?
You should know this one.
Oh, that was Boston PD.
Boston PD. Yeah.
I wrote that down, yeah.
Great quiz. I think that's 4.5 out of 5 we gave you.
Five and a half out of five because you got the bonus point for being
five
the first. I will say this, Dave. You are the first guest that has both asked for multiple choice up front and then said, hey, I have notes I took on this episode I can refer. We've had other guests that have had notes that they refer later. And then during the quiz, like, we didn't say it was closed note.
Right.
I will say this. When you said you're going to fail... I almost said, of course you're going to fail because these quizzes are ridiculous. There's a category
fail,
named after you. Didn't. You did awesome. So I'm saying you lied to us and
yeah.
I will remember that forever.
That's what happens when you have a professional on as a guest, right? Yeah.
But I'm just going to say there is a category named after me on this show that I think I'm like 1 for 6 on. I did know this one though.
Mm.
And now Dre explains.
Now this is where I would have checked out. If we're talking the where should people check out on Gray 17 is missing, I gotta know. This is something I do on the show, Dave, just to keep you in context, where I will routinely be like, what did you think of the scene? What do you think of the scene to the guest? We open the show where, just to keep you in full context, we're fighting the shadows. So we're fighting the shadows, this big bad. They are weak to telepaths, and telepaths are a very rare resource. These are things, as you mentioned, you're coming in middle, have been established. As you were going to learn in this episode, they go to an underground railroad, basically telepaths fleeing for help. And I will give a spoiler, kind of, because we have seen it previously. There are also, like, alien mech-controlled, like, body horror, like, interspersed with, like, mechanical technology telepaths that don't have, like, sentience anymore that are going to be used later in the show. So that is the importance. Telepaths are important, and we are going to risk the lives of despondent people and people that have been, like, experimented on. That is telepaths in this universe as we have been established. So they're like, we need telepaths. And our first scene in this episode is them screening telepaths and a guy lying about being a telepath, doing like a stand-up comedy bit to the guy saying, we need telepaths.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because, again, out of context, I assume telepath was something like a very coveted thing, right? Based on this guy. And then they're recruiting telepaths and then they say something about an underground railroad. So I kind of left this scene going, I can't tell if telepaths are good or bad or something you want to be or not. And again, that guy, I was like, I don't know guy, if this guy is par for the show or not. It's like, this guy is very silly. He feels like he belongs in like something for younger audiences. And so, like, keeping in mind the context of I'm just trying to get my groundings on this show, this scene gave me nothing entirely.
We've had other episodes where a guest person who maybe doesn't know the show, like, that's the problem is it's a weekly show. You've got guest people on. The guests might not know what type of show they're on. Their decision with how to play the role can be hit or miss. They get Robert Englund, who is Freddy Krueger, big name. So it's like you've got this amazing cameo actor, and you're like, I can't cut that out, right? He did me a big favor. And that's probably the Robert Englund plot in the whole, which we'll get to in a bit. I was like, is this actor somebody? Does he matter? And I tried to look him up, and no. So I was just like, what is this scene doing here? In part, because we're going to go to the next scene, which is we have Sheridan, our captain, and Ivanova. So these are number one and number two. You could think Picard and Riker for context. And they're like, we really need telepaths. Telepaths are going to be the key to the war. In show context, the episode before, we basically had the first win in this war using telepaths. So it makes sense. And they juxtapose it with a stand-up comedy scene. And then they say, well, we really need telepaths. We can't get them because they're not stupid. And every time we say we need you to fight the shadows, they run away. And they say, well, you know, who knew about telepaths was Franklin. But he's on walkabout. Watch last episode.
Walking about.
So again, the other part of scene one versus scene two is scene one is silly, and then scene two is two characters playing this very straight, giving us the exact same information that we just got in a much weirder way. So again, from a jarring perspective, I imagine, like, what is going on here?
Well, again, it felt like maintenance. Like, I assumed this was going to be what the episode was about.
Yeah.
And talking about it now, I completely forgot this is the opening because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter to the rest of this episode from what I remember. It seems like it moves on to the weird Thornheads and their junk, and then this side story of the missing floor.
I wanted to take you through the experience of the MCU again, where they keep making an offer and just, nope, pulling it back each time.
Yeah, it's an Age of Ultron where they're like, we just need to get from A to B, and this is like sort of our in-between story where we have to do, again, a lot of story maintenance, which is something like for TV writing. Like, I've never done TV writing, but I imagine this is kind of a hard line to walk where you're like, we should make it entertaining. We should make people feel like they're watching this episode for a reason. So they clearly threw in this floor thing, but none of it like kind of goes organically with the rest of the stuff, which I have seen this done well, where it's like, we're going to take you on a wacky adventure. And by the way, here's some stuff with these characters growing. Here's some stuff. Like, usually that's good for some character stuff of character growth, as opposed to trying to do all these other like little side events.
But usually there's like at least some kind of thematic connection you can find between everything when there is those stories. I mean, even like an anthology of stories, you're going to want some common theme between them. And in this, yes, it just feels like they didn't even try to do that.
Yeah, the telepaths, I assume these matter down the line. And so it's weird that they're like, where do we put this? I don't know, cram it at the beginning. Because what you'd want is like a teaser of the guy, like the maintenance worker dying or something like that. You want to actually give people a reason to keep watching, right? So you'd want to tease that story from the start and then have, you know, these characters walking down a hall talking about the recruiting the telepaths, and then go into someone approaching them about that or something like that. You want to keep that momentum of, yeah, the main plot. And it's true. If it's all thematically linked, that would be great too. But yeah,
if we had started with the maintenance worker being sucked down and then had someone talking to Zach Allen and randomly just like, oh, and he's like, what's the matter? And they're like, I felt something or whatever, makes sense. And he's like, yeah, so, you know, obviously we're looking for telepaths. You're a P3 or something. Their power levels are telepaths. We're looking for people to pipe the shadow, and the person, oh no, I'm not interested in that, and run off. It's like, yeah, you connect the stories, but that didn't happen here. And we have seen other, shout out to, I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, Jaina Mistry was on one of the shows, and I think she brought up, and if I'm quoting the wrong previous guest, said like tentpole scenes, right? And when these are organic, they're great. And that's the thing, this telepath one sticks out to all of us, right? We're just like, so what's this doing here? And then I get to quote a great Mike-ism about Babylon 5. It's like, and does it show up again?
No.
So we do get to the teaser you were talking about. We have a maintenance worker. Think about Babylon 5, supposed to be a very lived-in universe. So, you know, it's not like Star Trek. Things aren't perfect. Things break a lot. We need maintenance workers. He's working on a thing. And we do get a very, you know, blatant, for obvious reasons, Freddy Krueger homage. I think there's one of the early, like, 1 through 3 where someone gets pulled through a bed. He gets sucked into a floor, like a hole.
Johnny Depp in the first one.
Is that the
blood
one?
Yeah, I think he got sucked in the bed, and there's like the huge amounts of blood shot up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and by to your point, Dave, there was for a long time on the show, the kind of entry point for season one was a very monster of the week episodic. And in notes with JMS, he even said this, he had the one-off idea for a missing floor, which we keep referencing and we'll get to soon, people. But it's, yeah, we have this one-off idea, but the problem is at this point, the show is going full hog on like the plot. And so this stands out of place very much because it's like, we've kind of moved on from Monster of the Week at this point.
That's exactly what David was saying. Like up top, this would have been at least a little bit more of enticing than to have the other scene.
Yeah. And I mean, like and then you have the credits and then you see in the credits that Robert Englund's in it. Sadly, like, not as the monster. Like, he doesn't really need to be in this ultimately, but I see, you know, they have the stunt casting. They have a little monster story. Like, I think it would have been way better if this is between a major plot point, if they just did the monster thing and nothing else, just did a little, we're going to do Alien for one episode or something like that.
Let's just wrap up the telepaths really quick so we can get on to the meat of the episode. So full telepath thing is they're looking for telepaths despite the shadows. Franklin has information, but he's walking about. See last episode. Ivanova finds him walking through the station in a destitute part. So that's part of this show. Does Deep Space Nine have any of that where like parts of the space station are, you know, for homeless or destitute or people that are there for reasons out of their control?
I mean, it's very big. It's kind of in flux. It's one of many space stations that look like that. And some of them have been abandoned. So they'll do episodes where they just go to another space station to get like spare parts or to do specific, you know, they do like a hostage swap at one point. And it's very nice because basically they can just reuse the set like that they're using. There are entirely like abandoned stations, but DS9 itself is, I mean, everything's always broken. That's what Chief O'Brien's there for. But there's no, I don't think there's any like abandoned areas.
Yeah. Yeah. And this in Babylon 5, we have the down below, they call it. So it's a pretty regular place where they have anybody who's kind of passing through, got to the station, couldn't find a job or lost a job or is just homeless there. It's a whole section of the station where people just go and live on the streets of the station.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's in it. But and with that, so that's where Franklin is at now, because as we mentioned, he has a stim addiction that's, you know, just basically amphetamines for the future. We have Breaking Bad in the Babylon 5 universe. He's trying to like get clean and stay away, and he quit his job so he wouldn't get fired, basically for being like over the legal amount that he was supposed to be at. But everybody keeps looking for him, and he's like, I don't want to be found. But he's hiding in this tented area, and like Ivanova's walking by. I don't even see how he sees her. He calls out to her and says, hey, what are you doing here? So she wouldn't have seen him. She comes in, he's like, I didn't want to be found. It's like, why did you make noise? So Ivanova finds Franklin down below and goes, hey, you know how you were helping telepaths? Yeah. She's, I need you to give me their names so I can have them go die in a war. And he's like, okay, I'll do it as long as you leave me alone. It's funny because she's like, I can't promise that. And he's like, you need to. She's like, okay. And kind of went, you could just said, yeah. Like, you can lie to this guy. It's nothing stopping you, but whatever. It's whatever.
Walkabout is such a weird religious sabbatical. Like you can just get really messed up on drugs, just say, hey, I'm going to go on walkabout and be gone for a while. And like everybody in this universe just treats it with the utmost respect and authority. Oh, it's an official sabbatical. We can't get him on. He's walking about the station for a while.
Well, walkabout is a thing, right? I'm almost certain.
He says it starts from the Aborigines, but then in Babylon 5, he's put up that there is a religion that holds it as a thing as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I assume it's kind of a period of taking a break from your regular work to explore. One assumes it's the equivalent of bumming around Europe for a while is what I assume it is, but yeah. I don't actually know.
Yeah, they do explain it. Yeah, the previous episode is just more than fine, but it is just, yeah, Franklin saying, I need to walk and be alone for a while, and everybody on the command staff keeps bugging him. Admittedly, he keeps showing up, and it sounds, he's like, I don't want you to talk to me about walkabout, but every time they show up, he's like, let me talk to you more about walkabout. So it sounds very much like a, leave me alone, and unless you're here to hear what I want to talk about. But then he goes, okay, I do have what you're looking for. This will wrap up the telepath part. He says, I have files on the missing telepaths that I ran through the Underground Railroad. It's on my computer, hidden into the folder named Harry, which you nailed on the quiz. And like, my question, this just as the nerd is, I'm like, so you didn't just go to his files first? Like, you're like, man, we really need this file he has. And they go, he must have wiped it. And then his answer is, yeah, I wiped it except for leaving it in the very obvious spot on my computer. Not a plot hole, because incompetence at leadership levels is never a plot hole in shows, but I just, this made me laugh for so many reasons. This sticks out like a sore thumb part because they like track him down to have him give him an answer that's none of you could have figured that out. But, you know, maybe they need to kill 10, 15 minutes of the show.
Yeah, I see, again, I'm going into this blind, so I don't really know what anybody knows. So that didn't ping me because I'm like, I don't know who these people are and what their relationships are.
Yeah. Well, the good news, by the way, everybody, that is the end of Telepaths and Walkabout. We are done. It is never seen or heard from again in this episode. We are on to our A plot, which is Ranger One, the leader of the Rangers, needs to be replaced. Delenn is the obvious solution in that it's very George Washington. She's someone who doesn't want the role, which makes her ideal for this role. It went from being a joke. The Minbari had this, all the Rangers, they're a joke organization that doesn't do anything. The Shadow War starts up and suddenly the Rangers got a bunch of resources from a major race. There are a bunch of people fighting the Shadows that are also kind of spies and warriors. Suddenly they're important. And yeah, so
they're Jedi resistance to the Shadows.
The Shadows are just bad guys.
Shadows are the big bad that have been, all of season two was like, Shadows are bad and they look like these giant hair clips that destroy everything. So you can kind of think what like the Romulans on steroids, like the okay. Babe, or the Borg, you know, you can basically view them as the Borg, but scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Rangers have become this politically advantageous position that were previously a joke. The only person to take the role has to be someone that doesn't want to take it for political gain, which is Delenn. Okay. She's like our pure of heart religious person.
The leader of the religious caste. So she's, all the warriors now are arguing that, well, you can't have someone from the religious caste be in charge of a ship and be in charge of war. That gives them too much power. They're just supposed to be at home praying all the time for the actual warriors.
And this is a very exposition heavy, like, in case this is the first time you're seeing a show, let's catch you up on everything. And, you know, not the best scene, not the worst scene, but we do get the Rangers, followed by a wild scene, which is our chief of security just playing with a gun. I've got to ask this quick. I think it's the common trope on sci-fi shows. Security intrinsically has to be bad. Worf is a horrible warrior and horrible at security, because if he was good, all of our episodes would be over in 2 minutes.
Right.
This is your first introduction to the show. You've got Garibaldi as chief of security. Thoughts on Garibaldi as chief of security?
It's just a guy with an old gun. I was more focused on the gun because, you know, my first question was like, I actually thought this would have been fun if it's just regular guns. You know, like it's just the future and they never did phasers or anything. But then, of course, it's an old gun. And he does say they still use guns somewhere. I don't know. It's always jarring to see like a future, like a spaceship, and then someone just holding a regular gun. Although I will say later when he whips out what I assume is the phasers of the show, it just looks like a gun too. It just looks like a gun from like Time Cop or something. It's a little more futuristic. But yeah, I mean, he kind of stuck out. You know, he seems like just some guy. Like the gun and him look equally as sort of out of time, I would say. Like he seems like he belongs more on like a cop show or something like that. So in a way, it's kind of a very realistic chief of security, I'd say, because he looked like a cop.
Yeah.
He just looked like, I don't know.
There's been one ongoing thing we've had with Garibaldi where he never misses a chance to cosplay about something. He loves finding hats and detective costumes and stuff and going out. And so for this one, it's like, ooh, Gray 17? Mystery is afoot? I'm there. Can I bring my gun?
Yeah. He didn't bring like the old gun. The old gun doesn't matter. The bullets matter. Right. But the actual old gun, like I was really excited to see him just, you know, shoot this monster with a gun.
I am wondering if that was a studio note about what you're allowed to get away with. But yeah, Garibaldi has a gun. His second in command, Zach, one of the great haircuts of the show, comes in, says, man, somebody just disappeared. That's weird, isn't it? And Garibaldi is, well, as chief of security, who's just sitting in the office playing with my gun. Well, a big ceremony is about to go on. Yeah, I'm just going to check that out. That's interesting. Gray 17, weird. Mike points something out. He makes the classic sci-fi thing where he says Centauri Triangle, you know, reference the Bermuda Triangle, this thing where you're trying to age up things. It's like, you can just...
Why didn't he just say Bermuda Triangle? Like, you are from Earth. Have, like, we gone so far in generations that we've forgotten that was our myth and now it's the Centauri Triangle?
Yeah, I mean, they're referencing other things. They're referencing Underground Railroad and he has this old gun. Yeah, there's no reason why they can't also know what the Bermuda Triangle is. It means that there was like a new one, which is weird.
Exactly. Or there's a better one on Centauri that just kind of took over the idea of the old one.
Yeah.
All right. We get our second stand-up bit in this show. So we have the person pretending to be a telepath doing zingers. And then we have Garibaldi doing zingers. So he goes to find the missing person. And they're like, yeah, he just vanished. It's weird. But, you know, the grate was put back. So it's all good. Why would we worry? Again, that is actually kind of in-show lore where things are on a shoestring. And people are going to be like, ah, a disposable worker. Who cares? Garibaldi makes a joke about thin air. I've seen this done on multiple shows. It's not the worst, but again, it's just kind of out of place. You know, this person died and is missing and there's a mystery and he sounds good. Let's make some jokes about thin air. And then I did just have a note on this actress, which is Catherine Moffat, who is just, I was also wondering if this was a big name or something. She's a character actor that's been around forever, started on the Hardy Boys, ended with the remake of Get Smart. But it's, yeah, you know, the other interesting thing about this episode to me was outside of Robert Englund, none of the, you know, one-time characters, one-time actors were huge, which is what made their scene stick out because it's aged poorly. Dave, I'll give you some context. They get Scott Adams on the show at some point in season four. And so you're like, okay, that scene's a little weird, but you're obviously keeping it because Scott Adams is a fan of the show. He wants to be on the show. Let's leave it in because people are going to get a kick out of, hey, the Dilbert guy's on the show.
Right.
So these weird scenes with a one-time actor, I was like, are they leaving this in because that person's like a big name or, you know, seminal, to use that word again, to science fiction? I was just like, no.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at a certain point, they can't cut everything. But I also, again, like, I'm still figuring out who is a side character and who's a main character at this point, where I'm like, who's a Barkley? Who's someone we've seen multiple times? Who's a one-shot? You know, who's just an ensign that comes in and has a line? So, like, I'm still trying to figure that out at this point. She seemed good. Like, so you're telling me she never shows up again?
Yeah. And that could be something to the episode, to your point, which, I mean, I will say about Star Trek, I could be wrong, but I do think if you go into a random episode of Star Trek, I'm assuming the same with Deep Space Nine, it's usually pretty evident who's the day player, who's the regular. So you're saying you watch this entire episode, you're like, so who's regular? Who's who?
No offense to these actors, but they all had side character energy to me. Like, I didn't have anybody where I was like, oh, this is the person carrying the show. I was like, everybody here, if it weren't for the credits, everybody here feels like they could have just been in this episode, except for the obvious, okay, well, we're following that person on an adventure, so clearly that person. But in terms of, there's, you know, there's three levels where it's, okay, who's in the credits versus who shows up, you know, four or five times a season versus they're here and they're gone with these shows. And it was hard to distinguish that. Although it would be for, I think, any show if you're just watching one episode disjointed. So for all I knew, this woman was a regular, you know. They seem familiar enough. He's making jokes. He's making bad jokes about chubby air at her. So This also is one of those problems that at least every Star Trek has had, and I've said it before on, like, podcasts, the lack of security cameras, where I'm like, on a space station especially, where it's, I'm not saying that we should, you know, spy on everybody, but it's, you know, malls have security cameras. Like, why wouldn't this hallway, you know, that would be very helpful in this moment?
First off, Dave, spiritual energy, because I've said the same, but you want to know what makes this worse?
What?
We literally have multiple episodes this season that establish security cameras.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Star Trek has this too, where they'll sometimes watch a footage of something. Sometimes they'll ask the computers, like, omnipresent. Well, they'll be like, where's this person? They'll know. So, like, you'd think there'd be, yeah, something that would be able to tell them what the hell happened in this room.
Yeah, like instead of having to make the detective work of counting down seconds while you're going into an elevator, you should just be able to see it on a screen somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, I've definitely been hogging the mic for a bit. So, Mike, one of my favorite bits just happens. Do you want to talk about hide and seek with Naroon in the next scene? I love this.
In this next scene, we have Naroon coming in. And Naroon is the head of the warrior caste in Minbari. So he has just found out Delenn, the head of the religious caste, is going to take over Rangers, and he does not want this to stand for it. So he says he's going to stop her by any and all means necessary, which she kind of takes Let's Roll offer, until Lanier, her second in command, says, no, I think he's going to kill you. I think he's going to murder you. And that's a big thing in Minbari, because they also mention that no one on Minbari has killed another Minbari for over 1,000 years, like before Valen's time.
The hide and seek, right? I do love this. This is a trope in shows, but Sheridan to Delenn, so Sheridan, our captain, who would be a main, but in this episode is kind of pushed to the background, is talking to Delenn about being put in charge of the Rangers. And when he's done talking to her, he walks away. And then Naroon, this guy in a big black coat and a warrior gear, just like pops out of nowhere to like immediately answer. And it's like, you had to have been standing there the whole time. Did none of us acknowledge the giant that had to have been standing in this very well-lit hallway that we are all standing in? But he pops in to answer. And then, as Mike mentioned, right, that starts doing the threat of, hey, this big thing is going to happen. And Delenn's like, what's the big deal? And Lanier is scared.
And Naroon's, so he's not a bad guy. I was like trying to, he seems like they have, again, the Klingon honor thing where he's just a lot. Right? He's just a lot.
Yeah, he's an antagonist for sure at certain points, but okay. He's not a bad guy, is the best way to put it. He's like representing one of the other castes on Minbari, so they're always at every race in Babylon 5 has like their own political structure and how they deal with their own internal politics and against other races, which is one of the best things about the series. And the Minbari are always about these three castes, always kind of vying for power within the Minbari.
What I'm going to attempt to do, by the way, to both of you, is I'm going to kind of consolidate the two stories in the next couple of scenes before the main one. I mucked this up before, so that's just more work for future editor me. And so Lanier is the second in command, one of the bonehead guys, to Delenn, the bonehead with hair, who is talking about the bonehead with a cloak. Got to make sure we differentiate all the boneheads. And he's saying the bonehead with a cloak is going to try and kill the bonehead with the hair. Bonehead with the hair says, nah, boneheads don't kill boneheads. Except for over 1,000 years ago. We'll get to that in a bit. And so Lanier says, well, I got to do something. And he shows something that is a recurring thing we've been talking about. Lanier is supposed to be very pure and naive and innocent. And he always winds up doing duplicitous stuff, which I actually think is good character building for future episodes and seasons. He goes to Marcus, which that had to have been a trip too, Dave, right? To just get introduced randomly to a British dude with like,
oh, the pirate.
Ooh, pirate. Mm-hmm. I never called Marcus. He is absolutely a pirate. You are so right.
Yeah.
He goes up to Pirate Marcus. So Marcus is one of our main rangers with a British accent, looks like a pirate. He's basically, hey, look, this bonehead wants to kill that bonehead. Boneheads aren't supposed to kill each other. I've also been told I'm not supposed to tell anybody. Lanier goes, boneheads can't kill boneheads. I'm also forbade from telling anybody, but I can get around it by just talking it to you. So... And I do get Marcus rightly calls him out and is just, okay, dude, you're just lying, but okay. Which also I do think juxtaposes well, because the Minbari are like, we have rules, we have tradition, we don't break the rules. And we very clearly see one of them being like, you know, the Batman, I'm not going to kill you, I'm just not going to stop the train that's going to run into you from running into you. So even if Minbari don't kill Minbari, I'm sure they saw, you know, Batman.
Hey, I had a big issue with that, because this is a race where Minbari don't kill Minbari, they keep putting this forward, but they also have a codified ritual for Minbari to go in and fight to the death against each other. Is it just that they haven't done this in 1,000 years? I know this time it's like a human and a Minbari, but why do they have a set ritual for killing each other if they're not allowed to kill each other?
Right, so this doesn't happen often?
No, this hasn't happened in 1,000 years, according to the episode.
But to kind of explain backstory lore and give Dave the final answer on it, in lore, what we're kind of told is the Minbari pre 1,000 years ago were barbaric and they had these rituals, and we see some of them. And so what we have now is, as Mike is getting bug-rised, he's like, wait, they all know this. So it's this very weird thing of saying, this is a super outdated ritual over 1,000 years ago, but we all know it and we all know the rules to it immediately. So it's a weird juxtaposition. We don't kill each other, but we all know this rule to... how to kill
right.
Each other.
See, this is why I assumed, because I said at the top they feel very Klingon coded, because they have this. They seem to be a warrior race. They seem to have rules, and they seem to have a concept of honor. And honor becomes kind of a loophole. That happens a lot with Klingons, where it's, if you don't want a character to die, the Klingons will decide there's honor on this other route, or they have fought honorably. There's no need to kill them, etc. And so this just felt very like a slightly more aristocratic Klingons. And so I just assumed this fight with poles, with like construction site poles, was something they like, that was their bat lists, where I'm like, all right, I guess this is what we do. It felt more brutal because it's like, you can't stab someone with that. You just have to beat them to death. That was where I was coming from, is it just seemed like you're saying everybody knew what it was. So I'm like, all right, I guess this is a thing they do.
Yeah, time for Densha. I declare Densha. Densha time, everybody. Place your bets.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that very shortly. So that's why we've got part A going on, which is Marcus has been told by Lanier in a loophole, just slow him down. And his technique to slow him down, to give a spoiler already, is he's going to go challenge him to a fight to the death. As opposed to, you know, just like talking to him. That would have worked too. That's going on there. And then we finally get to our haunted house in space. Garibaldi, chief of security, is riding an elevator alone because the tech said to him something. It was like, hey, this guy disappeared. And it's like, yeah, he disappeared. You know, the 29 parts of Gray Sector are all just, you know, random. And he's like, there's supposed to be 30. It's a space station. It's symmetrical. There's 30 things everywhere. There should be 30. And she's like, oh, just a mistake. Who knows? And so his solution to this is to go on the elevator and go floor by floor in time between each floor. And he notices that between floor 16 and 17 or 17, whatever, you know, that part, it normally takes 3 seconds. It takes six. So there's a manual override, gets off on floor 17.
Well, whose ship is this? What I mean is that DS9 has a lore that DS9 isn't a Federation space station. It's a Cardassian space station that the Federation has taken over. So they do have moments like this where they're like, what the hell is this? Because it's not their space station and they have to discover certain things. So like my read on this was that it's like, he's not used to this and he's, I guess I'll just get in the damn elevator and count the floors.
That's really good. This was built by Earth and Minbari together. So a joint collab. That's weird.
Well, they mentioned earlier in the episode, they have the blueprints.
If the Starship Enterprise, where they're like, we're missing a floor. And it's like, how the hell are you missing a floor?
And they just said, we don't know. We never investigated, but we know this floor is weird.
Yeah, that's very silly. Again, not knowing the show, because these inconsistencies that you're talking about, for me, was just establishing the show.
Yeah.
So it's me going, okay, I guess this guy's new or he doesn't know this place. Got it. That's what that meant to me.
We're saving you a whole bunch of time in the future by killing your curiosity, if it ever were exist, about Babylon 5, David.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so he gets into this broken down section that no one's known about. He's walking around and he comes across green ventriloquist dummy with two eyes that's talking weird.
It's got one eye and one glowing red robot eye that's set to send out trink darts.
Yep, the thing says, you shouldn't be here, cackles maniacally, and shoots him with the tranquilizer dart.
I was really disappointed that the dummy never comes back.
Yeah.
By the way, I made a note of this, because a lot of this, again, is lore. My eyes are glazing over. Not everything up until this point wasn't particularly bad or unusual. It was just plot shit that I'm not really privy to. And I was like, there's 15 minutes left in this episode. And we haven't even seen Robert Englund. And we got this puppet. And it was like me kind of going, thank Christ. Like, why wasn't this happening 15 minutes into the episode? Because at this point, I was like, give me something.
We had to do 5 minutes recapping the walkabout story that was in the previous episode of the show and the telepaths that, again, were in the entire last episode, covered the stuff that went nowhere. So it's funny because you're right. It's world building, but it was needless world building because we literally did it the episode before. All right. So Garibaldi wakes up. His gun is gone. The good news is the puppet is still there. It's like in the background, and we see that its eye is now gone. So it only had one trink dart, apparently. And he wakes up, and Robert Englund is there holding up his hand in a very Freddy Kruegerish pose. And I can see this being the like fan service, right? As someone who has a guest on the podcast that I am a huge fan of, it's going to be very hard for me to go like, how dare this sci-fi writer go out of his way to pigeonhole in a guest star that's one of the biggest names in horror onto his show.
It's just such a bummer because he's not needed. Like, they're trying to give him something that's a little meaty here, but you got to have him as the thing killing people, right? That's what I was hoping for. I was hoping for, if we're going to do it, let's do it. You know, if we're going to have Freddy on, Just give him dumb claw hands. Just make him knock off Freddy or something running around the ship.
Because we do have a Red State kind of scenario where Garibaldi wakes up and there's this like weird religious cult led by Robert England. And he's standing there talking about his hand, and you do be like, Freddy hands, Freddy hands. You're like, great. What's really weird about this scene too, Mike, did you notice this? A lot of the stuff that Robert England is saying as the cult leader is stuff that you would notice it all day. Delenn regularly says about the universe, because we're all made of stars and where the universe manifests trying to understand itself. Delenn, our religious, grounded, spiritual character, has said all of this stuff non-ironically and non-creepily over the last three seasons.
Well, it really felt like just boilerplate cult leader type stuff to go, we are one, everything, and then only this thing. He pivots very quickly from that into only the strongest will survive. And it really felt like they were just kind of grasping at straws to justify having the monster that's going to come in later. I didn't get much of anything about anything he was saying besides, yep, that's kind of what a cult leader would say. I think that is good, though, that like they did try to bring in some of that everything's born of stars and continue that, but they didn't go anywhere with it.
So there's no internal consistency like none of this gets explained in this episode, really. I don't know what the monster was. I don't know who these people were. I didn't know that this was a station where there were just people wandering around where this, because clearly my first thought was like, okay, this is apparently not that abnormal because our main guy is, he's not that freaked out. He's just, okay, everybody has to clear out of here. So, you know, if the Enterprise found like squatters, that would be really confusing. But it seemed like that wasn't confusing. And then the cult, like DS9 has like a Pa Wraith cult. It has various religions that I was like, maybe this is something related to that. But I mean, it sounds like at least the fact that they're squatting isn't that unusual. So I guess that goes down a little easier when he's just saying gibberish, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like we were talking earlier. That's just the presence of the down below area of this ship. It just really illustrates the big differences between Babylon 5 and Star Trek in that, you know, Star Trek is very egalitarian. It's like the utopian society, whereas like Babylon 5 really wants to bring in all the downside of society. I mean, you know, we've talked about like drug addictions pretty heavily, like sabbatical religious. We're talking about just people who have to live on the streets of Babylon 5. So yeah, this isn't that out of place. I mean, what is out of place is how it just doesn't connect up with the blueprints and just the existence of this entire floor of Gray Sector.
Well, for the record, DS9 deals with a lot of that stuff too. It's more like TNG doesn't. Is the big, shiny, idealistic, like everything's perfect. To some extent, they still deal with like addiction and certain things, but this to me felt like, okay, we're going to find out in this episode, even though there's 15 minutes left. I need to know, because this character seems as surprised as me, surely we will find out why they're here and what happened to this floor and what this monster is and what this puppet is. Is the puppet something that, is that a usual thing? Is that something that you might see on this show and go, oh yeah, I know that puppet.
Yeah. All of those things you said are more interesting than what actually happens, where the monster comes out and then we shoot him.
Is any of that familiar? Is the puppet familiar? Okay, yeah. See, there are, again, this is like the frame of reference I have are there are, you know, those batshit episodes of Voyager, DS9, or TNG, where it's usually like this wacky thing on the holodeck or like some alien race that's very silly. But they usually still explain what's happening. It's all to say that Star Trek has had those meme moments where you're like, that's silly as hell. I just sort of assumed when I saw this puppet and all this stuff, all right, this is silly, but they're going to tell me why. It'll be something where at the end they'll go, so it turned out that group was this group of children that got lost and ended up that was the child's puppet as a kid or some sort of explanation, but none of this ever gets explained.
What's making it fascinating to me, just hearing you talk out loud, is there were threads they could have pulled at. There are things that have been established in the universe they could have used. And the easiest answer I can give is like twofold. JMS wrote every episode of this season, which I think is like the first time it had been done. So he's the showrunner. I would not be shocked if he was just like, I was out of energy. I actually sent one of my favorite Far Side episodes. It's a Gary Larson, and it's a kid inside of a beehive, and there are like two bee detectives looking at holes, and they go, the rocks were coming from inside the hive. One of my favorites, but then the thing that caps it is the tag on the bottom was, it was late, I was tired. And so, and I even think like JMS in interviews since, and it's just been like, yeah, you know, if you're working yourself to death writing all the time, they're not all going to be winners. And that pretty yep. much happened here, which kind of is it. But to kind of cap off at least that part of the Freddy Krueger thing, we got this cult, this guy talking weird, has to keep showing his hand because he's got a reference that he's Freddy Krueger. And then Garibald's like, we got to get out of here. And if this had more time to breathe, would have probably landed better. He's like, oh, yes, maybe it is time. Now, well, you have to be pure to get out. Maybe it's time now. We'll do that. Again, with lead up or whatever, with time, that could have been like scary. But as we all noticed, right, we got 10 minutes left in the episode and we haven't done anything with the telepaths. We haven't done anything with Ranger One. And we do immediately cut away to the next scene. So don't worry, we'll return to cult. We get back to the Ranger One ceremony. So Delenn's going to be sworn in. And what they basically explain is, hey, there's a ceremony to swear in. We have a bunch of people coming in from out of town, right? It's like a wedding. And the logic Lanier has, the bonehead assistant, is as soon as the ceremony's done, Narun can't do anything because, you know, we're Minbari, we have rules. So we have this like nice two-cut where we have this very religious ceremony where she's getting sworn in. At one point, she has wine. Mike noticed correctly that we have a bunch of just random actors on the show that have to go into huge prosthetics that are main actors, people on the main role that have no speaking parts, but had to get dressed up for 2 seconds in this. That's all going in on the A side. Well, on the B side, in the dark, Marcus has confronted Narun. I'd be really curious to both of you. I did actually think the pirate fighting, you know, Bonehead with a cloak, I did think that scene was pretty cool.
Yeah, oh, it's always fun to see two guys bash each other in with pipes. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, thumbs like up. I said, it's way more brutal than Batless or anything like that. It felt, I don't know, there's lots of blood. Like, it's to the death with poles means beating to death. You know, it's the Team America joke where he's, if you have to kill yourself, use this, and gives him a hammer. Where it's like, couldn't you have done this a little bit like cleaner? But that's was cool. I agree.
So I thought it was really odd that we got a lot of in-cut shots of both Lanier and just some of the other Minbari religious cast. Just it'll cut to them just watching and whispering to each other. And that's another thing that didn't really, I had watched it a few times, like that doesn't come back either. What are they whispering about? And the only thing I could think of is these guys are definitely betting on the outcome. But yeah, they get mysterious things of just Lanier just looking side-eyed at the whole battle.
Marcus and Narun are fighting. They, you know, they say lots of stuff. We all know the rules to Den Shah, that 1,000-year-old ditty. And of course they both do. They both brag. And I was trained by this guy. I was trained by that guy. They're, you know, fighting. I did actually think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm reading too much into it. Fight-wise, stylistically, I dug it because Narun is very just straight at you, really strong. And Marcus is like turning around sideways and doing lots of things. That does speak to their two characters.
Say Narun is the Tom Hardy of the two of them in the Warrior situation.
Nice callback, call forward. Who even knows? Warrior is a great movie. But yeah, basically, Narun is just absolutely just straightforward, very blunt. He's more powerful. Marcus is, you know, dancing around. That is his character as well. Not shocking. Marcus is getting destroyed, and Narun at the very end is just, dude, you knew you were dead. What the hell? And then Marcus basically says, hey, we live for the one, we die for the one. That is a saying they have said about the one. Very culty, because that was in the Ranger lore before any of this. Like, the Rangers just all say, we live for the one, we die for the one. Signs you might be in a cult anywhere. And Narun, like, at that point, like, steps back, and he's like, human's gonna die for Minbari. We'll hear more about this later. Then he does do a badass thing, and this was worth it. This plot line, all of this, Mike, to me was worth it because Narun has been beating a guy to death that no one knows about except when you're in the other people, the other boneheads betting on it. They have this big religious ceremony. It looks like a Catholic ceremony. Everybody's in white. She's drinking wine. Narun walks in, bloodied face, bloody pike, and our two main characters look at each other, and one goes, is this part of the ceremony? And that actually landed. For all the other shit, all the other bad stand-up that failed in this episode, that line was hilarious. So is the guy with the bloody pipe coming in mid, is that part of it? that works.
Yeah, it's an organic joke. Like, yeah, it works. That's why it works. Yeah.
And it was another flip. Like, that was the first and second command of the ship being like the, you know, the side characters, like giving the, like the funny hit on the side. Is this part of the ceremony? What's going on here? So it's almost like what you're saying before about not knowing who's a main character or not of the main plot. Those are two of the most main characters, as main as you can get. And that was their one line for like most of this episode.
I do appreciate an episode like that where it's like the main people are just sort of taking a break for while everybody else does some sort of weird, silly bullshit, you know?
Except for Garibaldi, who...
You can easily say what he's doing is some weird, silly bullshit.
Yeah. And then he drops, yeah, Narun, awesome. The actor's one of my favorite, the character's one of my favorite. He drops the pike and is just like, there's blood between us, you know, but, you know, he was willing to die for you. I wouldn't, you know... I hope you're happy, very wicked. And then, you know, no musical number, just storms off. But the land's been sworn in as Ranger One. Marcus is dying somewhere. Narun is being funny. Jakar gets his day raped. That's the lizard guy because he was in the crowd very briefly. Cut back to the end of Freddy versus Alien. So that's just the rough part. It's clearly the idea in somebody's head is how awesome would it be to have Freddy Krueger versus Alien? So what we have discovered is this weird cult on this floor we've never heard of. The floor's never seen or heard from again. The cult has never seen or heard from again. They have smuggled in an alien called the Zarg.
Who has never seen or heard from again.
The Zarg never brought... And that's the thing. We have other aliens that are bad or things that we have...
Are you telling me a Zarg is not something we've seen on the show before?
Nope. This is a one-shot.
You've never seen it before?
Because he says it by name. He says, at the end, I encountered a Zarg. I just assumed, because again, I was like, he doesn't seem surprised. And I was like, so do we know this monster? Like, I was like, is this monster something that we need to, like, what is this monster? Where did it come from? And in this episode, at the end, he names it. And I go, oh, okay, I guess that must be some sort of monster that shows up on the show every now and then.
Nope.
You know, like something that it's like a... weird comparison, like a tribble, where you're just like, oh yeah, we got tribbles, you know, where it's like everybody knows what this is. Sometimes they show up, sometimes they're stuck in the vent somewhere or something like that, like a rat essentially. So that's surprising again, because this didn't end up seeming weird in the episode because they talk about it like there's context that I'm just not aware of.
Yeah. There is context, but it's only in universe where only they have the context and they have left the viewer completely out of that context.
That's wild.
I will give a throwback, a shout back to a previous episode of this season, Dave. This season of Babylon 5 beat out the Deep Space Nine episode with Tribbles. It beat it out for the Hugo. So the show you just watched had an episode that beat out Deep Space Nine, the one where they go back to the original.
Back to the Future 2, the Tribbles.
It beat that out for a Hugo. Just ruminate with that for a bit. The show you just watched beat Deep Space Nine at the Sci-Fi Award Show.
Well, I mean, that Deep Space Nine episode is good, but it's also, it was the anniversary of Star Trek, and it came from like a mandate of, you got to do something. Everybody has to do something. So that didn't come from like a soulful place. So I'm like, I like that episode. But that episode is as Marvel as Deep Space Nine gets, frankly, what it's like, you know, what if we fanned out about the original series? So I guess I don't think that episode deserves much of an award compared to some of the other Deep Space Nine episodes. It's actually surprising that Deep Space Nine wouldn't win for something else because they've had way better. It's not like The Inner Light where it's like it's the episode. Like, again, that's a fun episode. It's just not... They have an episode of Deep Space Nine because Deep Space Nine isn't against having dumb episodes. They have one where the Ferengis go back in time and cause the Roswell cover-up, are the Roswell aliens, which is a very silly episode. But it's they'll have that where they're like, we're doing fascism and war, but let's have fun for an episode. So, I don't know. I'm not against those, and that's what this seems like it should have been, but it failed to do completely.
So this group is smuggled in, apparently a dangerous monster that everybody knows about. And Jeremiah's like, here's the deal. You either get through this monster and prove that you're pure of soul, or this monster kills you and you get reborn again, very culty. and splicing together a bunch, because there's a bunch of dialogue in that of it's good with Garibaldi and Robert England, where Robert England's, okay, I'm ready to be cleansed or prove that I'm pure. And it's actually, never mind, I'm not quite ready. And it's supposed to be played for a joke. But again, I agree with you. If you're going to have him on the show, make him a badass, make him dangerous, make him something, make him the Zarg. And a Zarg is supposed to be alien-like, but it's just, you know, you don't have either the budget of Alien Aliens, which was already pretty small to begin with, but not that great, or the directing talents of James Cameron. So it's just this bad monster of the week that has had no time to build up. So and we have not heard about it, to your point, Dave. Like, there's no reason we should be scared of this. And Garibaldi says, I know. And he has some bullets from that gun originally. And there was a steam pipe that he used to scare the monster away. And he goes, I know, I'll put these bullets in the steam pipe and kill it. They have explained in lore, you cannot use bullets on a space station because it could breach the hull and kill. That's why they have phasers. They've said it's ignited helium. They're in show lore. Garibaldi, chief of security, who has explained in this episode to his second in command why they have to use PPGs, puts bullets in a steam pipe to try and shoot an alien that is right in front of the hull of the ship multiple times. Now, he does take down the alien, the scary alien that was supposed to be intimidating. We saw one shot to show the bad costume, and then it dies. And then he basically grabs Robert and goes, you're coming with me. That is the rap.
Also, I mean, this is also kind of nitpicking, but bullets don't work that way. The thing about bullets is that, because he's putting in a steam pipe and the idea is what, you heat the bullets and it ignites the gunpowder. But the thing is that, like, a bullet is heavier than its casing. So if you throw a bullet in, if you heated a bullet, the casing would go flying, not the bullet. So this wouldn't work, is my point. There's no universe where this MacGyver-ass situation, yeah, unless they're like very special bullets.
Getting the right circumference on the pipe to perfectly match the bullet, you'd have to.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't just let him use his gun. I forget why the phaser doesn't work, the future gun. I forget.
They took it away. That's what the cult
he should have just had the damn gun somehow. Yeah.
Meemaw's gun from the PD should have been like the way that was set up. That should have been little Chekhov's gun.
They should have like scanned him and took his future weapon because it had some, you know, future bullshit that they detected.
Sorry, both of you are wrong. I'm sorry to cut in and do this. He comes in with a puppet. He grabs the puppet head and says, does this have anything left in it? He punches the back of the puppet head and a trank dart goes in and takes it out. That's how this needed to end.
Oh, yeah. The puppet head could fire the bullet. That actually makes sense. It's just they do literally Chekhov's gun where they're like, here's a gun. And in the spirit of this episode, they don't follow up with the gun. The gun never matters. Like when he showed the gun, I was like, he's going to use that gun in this episode. I don't know anything about this show, but I know that he's going to use that gun. And then he doesn't.
Nope. You just saw what he's going to do with that gun. He's just going to play with it in his office.
Yeah.
All right, so we are mostly wrapped up except for two fun scenes. I'm going to do the stupid one first, the one I like second. So the actual end of the show is Garibaldi walks into Sheridan's office, and rightfully so. Sheridan goes, you are the chief of security. We just had one of the most important ceremonies that has happened on this station, even more so since they've broken away from Earth. That's the plot. They're not doing this right. They're not with Earth anymore. They're on their own. Where the hell were you the whole day? And Garibaldi's response is to say, hey, I went and found a hidden level with a Zarg that was smuggled in by a religious cult, as if this would make it better. Oh, and there's this cult that was doing all these things. What? There's a cult you didn't know
about?
And
that's it, though. They pull a literal fade out. It's like in music. Like, there's been so many songs that, you know, and in cover bands, you try to cover and figure out, well, what's the end of this song? And realize, oh, they just faded it out as if they didn't have an ending. And that's, look, this is a complete fade out at the end. They didn't have an ending, so they just kind of faded out into credits.
It's very jarring.
I like the silence is perfect. Now, the other scene that actually does work well is Marcus is in med lab because he's been beaten to death. Lanier found him. And Naroon shows up. There are several good lines, and they're all in the Naroon plot. So Naroon, bonehead with a cloak, shows up and says, I want to speak to him warrior to warrior. Badass line. Delenn and Lanier are like, he's in a coma. You almost beat him to death. His response there is, then it will be a short conversation. more of this would have been awesome the whole episode. So they leave and he walks in and he basically recaps what I think I said earlier, where he says, hey, I'm a warrior. I'm all about honor. I was going to kill you because clearly this person was doing the wrong. And I realized that you are willing to die for this person. I was willing to kill him. We're not supposed to kill. You're making me have an epiphany about myself. Thank you as a warrior. And, you know, Mark's supposed to be out, but, you know, classic trope, right? He was awake. He's able to wake up and talk. And his line is, the next time you decide to have a revelation, could you have one that is less painful? And then Narun starts cracking up, and that's the end of that. And that's like, and I've got to be curious, did that at least wrap up? That one I thought wrapped up okay. That was the other argument I've had, is this episode is maligned for the Robert Englund plot, rightfully so.
I mean, that was when I was like, okay, this guy is definitely not like the villain we're doing. Again, it's like a Klingon thing. It's still there, like 90s cheese, but it definitely felt like that little, that was all wrapped up for sure. You know, again, without the context of anything, it seemed that way. Based on that.
Of our plots, right? That's the only one that actually had a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
So the question we usually ask at the very end, Dave, is what did you think of the episode? And are you going to watch it for half of the thought?
I mean, not based on this. I mean, I have so many things to watch already. I haven't even watched Battlestar. And I'm like, I know I need to watch that before Babylon 5, you know? This was mostly, I mean, I just found this kind of a slog. Like, for the most part, that's why I'm like, I was so happy once we got to the actual hidden floor. And it was like, man, only 15 minutes left. Because most of it is, again, out of context, it's like a standard sci-fi show. It felt like I didn't get really any charisma off of anybody in this episode, at least. It's a very, I mean, again, without any context, I mean, the most I can give it is that if this is a bad representation of the show, it's a very bad representation of the show, because it was like a charisma vacuum. It was like there was nothing to glom onto in terms of likability of the characters.
Not even the pirate? Nothing.
I mean, he was the most likable, but and not to be like a sci-fi snob, but it's a lot of like where I'm like, yeah, I've seen better versions of the space rogue, you know, where it was like the staff fighting was the only thing that made me go, oh, that's cool. And then the general idea, the general premise of this missing floor was cool. But like everything else, it just, you know, it's got Beast Wars graphics, which can't really be helped for when it comes out. It's just that it's dated and I don't have any nostalgia for it. And then without really having any connection to the characters, they're definitely not putting their best foot forward here, where it's like, There's very little charisma. It's very like ceremonial and everybody's being very serious and they're talking. And so the security guy was fun, but he didn't even have that much time. So there's really nothing to grasp onto for me, I'd say ultimately.
I think it's telling that we all said that the one line that came through the clearest was the one that Sheridan and Ivanova had off to the side as, is this part of the ceremony? And that was just an aside for the entire episode. That's kind of like the most charisma that came through.
Right. Yeah, it struck me as like mostly like a wedding episode of a show that you don't know the show. And you're like, who's these people? Why are they doing this? I don't know their backstory, but they seem to be doing the ceremony. And it seems pretty important to them.
Yeah. And two of our main characters didn't get anything. Londo and Jakar are two of the most rich characters in this entire series. Jakar is the lizard guy that we said was just in a couple of background scenes where he still had to get into full makeup for no dialogue on this. And Londo was nowhere to seen. He's the best example of a Twilight Zone character because he keeps wanting power. He doesn't get it in the way he wants, but he's always given it through some side thing that makes it more of a burden for him throughout the entire series.
Right.
So that's a fun arc to go through. And there's none of that in this.
I wanted to see, because they promised side mohawks in the credits. And
that's
there wasn't
Londo.
Any
side that's the guy
mohawk.
I was just talking about. Okay, he's side mohawk.
Yeah, yep. Okay. Yeah, there just wasn't any side mohawk action, too.
Nope.
And that's kind of the only thing I knew about Babylon 5.
Yeah, we just
like, that's the show with the side mohawks. Yeah.
This, to me, again, was some of the energy of the movie nights over at Gameplay Unemployed. And so, like I said, Mike, maybe this was a really long con to be like, this is making up for the times where Dave randomly puts horrible stuff up on movie nights, which again are still a blast. And that this was still a blast for me and that getting to talk to two.
One of these days, he'll pronounce my name correctly.
But, oh yeah, Simpsons callback. But and I was going to say, it's just, you know, I enjoy this kind of thing, like good or bad, watching things with friends, especially people with great minds, is fun. And this was a blast. Basically hit about as well as it could, because I'll be also 100% candid. I remember this is the worst episode. It's been called such. I agree with that. I pitched it to both of you, and I basically said, we're not doing this episode unless we get Dave. Dave is the only way we go ahead with this episode. And you agreed, and that was like the most amazing thing. And then I hadn't done my rewatch before. Mike's a little ahead of me, and so, he takes notes, and I watch him. I went and looked at Mike's notes and saw the first scene and went, I forgot that's how this episode started. And I was like, oh, my God.
What have I done?
It's too late. Too late to turn.
It's hard, because when something is bad, like, we try to avoid this on movie nights where it's like there's levels of bad, right? And it's like what I've learned, and not that it's the ultimate metric, but when a movie lands at 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, it's usually bad in an entertaining way. And what I learned is that when it hits a zero, that means there's nothing redeeming. That's when it becomes a movie that you're like, oh my God, like I'm falling asleep during this. And I would say the first half of this isn't that. It's not so bad that I'm falling asleep. It's just being at a party and not knowing anybody where I'm like, all right, I guess this stuff is important, but there's nothing like over the top happening. So like the badness, it sounds like, of that part has to do with the consistency of the show. Because for me, I'm just like, all right, I guess this is what's happening on this show. Versus once the puppet shows up, you're like, okay, this is something I can sink my teeth into because I'm assuming this is abnormal for the show versus like business as usual. So I don't know. In terms of like people saying this is the worst episode, it sounds like a lot of context is important for some of it, because I don't even think this is that out of control. Ultimately, again, for a show, I'm like, I don't know, how often do they deal with monsters? You know, how often are they dealing with like weird cults? Because like the X-Files, there's a trash monster, and it's, well, they deal with monsters, you know? So not knowing kind of what kind of a show it is, it's always hard to gauge when it's the worst episode of a TV show, what that means ultimately. Because I think you have to have more context ultimately. You have to be a fan of the show to know what counts as the worst, you know? Sometimes not. There's the Star Trek where Beverly fucks the ghost. And I think most people watch that. If they watch that out of context, they'll be like, yeah, that's weird.
You've shown that on movie night. It is absolutely worth it. And Jeff has broken cards of that on Jeff Has Cool Cards. And hopefully you or other fans of Gamefully have gotten those cards. So that is a wild. It's funny. You pulled a little judo there, Dave, where you're like, this is bad, but it's bad because it's not as bad. And I do love that point.
Oh, yeah. There's gradients of bad. And like with movie night, it's always important. We try to show like bad fun. Always, again, we're always trying to just do, we're trying to watch as many things as we can. So it's sometimes you put on Frogs and you're like, oh, this is the bad kind of bad. This is the kind of bed where we're just watching like grainy footage of people in the 70s talk to each other. And that's a bummer.
And just to clarify, this episode of Babylon 5 would not make the movie night threshold.
I don't know. Again, I'd have to be a fan. And I think I'd have to be like, you know, it's hard because I think that I've played DS9 and Star Trek episodes that don't really make that threshold sometimes too. Because as when you're a fan of a show, it's just the context matters more as opposed to a show that's just, or an episode that's just like entertainingly batshit to anybody walking in. You know what I mean? Mm. And there's very few episodes of a TV show like that, I would argue, where it's, oh, I can throw this on. And if you don't know anything about the X-Files, you automatically go, well, there's something wrong here, or this is fun in a unique way. So I don't know, if you're not a Star Trek fan and I throw on, I don't know, it could go both ways, right? If you throw on like the Inner Light and go, this is the best Star Trek, or you throw in like Starship Mine where it's Die Hard with Picard, where it's, this is fun, but I don't know if it's as fun if you care who Picard is, you know? Mm.
I would say, Dave, anything else for people to check out, including, I think this is a nice good spot for plugs, and no matter what you do, I guarantee I'll heap some on top because you do a lot of great stuff.
Sure. I mean, you said it all. There's Gamefully Unemployed. Just check that out wherever you get podcasts. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. And yeah, I'm the head writer over at Some More News, which is very different than everything we've been talking about. But that's a YouTube show and a podcast. Just Google that. You'll find it. And that's really my stuff.
I have to, without doubt, shout out Small Beans. If you like listening to Dave talk science fiction, the show you do over there regularly with Michael Swaim is Star Trek The Next Futurama, where you compare episodes of Star Trek to Futurama. That is always a blast. That's also a lot of just, you were going to say, the Dave and Mike podcast show where you two talk. I enjoy a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
So for sure. And the $10 tier over at Gamefully for movie nights. If you can make it, it's a blast. All right. Well, we've taken you a little past the time we set out for. It is amazing to have on. Thank you. Hopefully, I've been on a couple podcasts with you now. Hopefully, agree to future ones. If not, by the way, one of the tricks is over at Gamefully Unemployed, if they open up, because you and Tom Ryman, amazing over there, your time is, there are tiers where you can sponsor that. So hit all of that up. Are you super active on any of the socials, Blue Sky, Instagram, things you would like people to check out?
Not really. I'm on Blue Sky, but I don't need to plug it. I'm not.
Cool. Yeah. Then we won't.
So you can search for David Bell. That's your homework of the audience. If you really want to find David Bell, we're not going to do the full work for you.
Just Gamefully Unemployed. All the stuff there.
Yeah. If you want to find him on Blue Sky, that's how you do it. Otherwise, Gamefully Unemployed and Some More News and Small Beans. Those three, I would say, well worth your time. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate you giving us the time here.
Thank you.
I'm Dre Alvarez, Found Most Places, Nerd Numbers. With me, Mike Slater, Found Most Places on the internet is Slatron, occasionally Slatron 11. Also check out MikeSlater.com for some amazing articles, recaps of the shows like this. I cannot wait to see what you say about this one. If you just say, fuck you, Dre, completely acceptable. And this was a blast. And good news, everyone, the next show is going to be season 3's finale, Zaha Doom. An amazing episode. One, if I was going to throw someone a random way, I'd be like, if you're just going to watch one episode from season 3, you should watch that. It's incredible. Anyway, Dave, thanks for watching this one.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, thanks a lot, Dave.
All right.
Cheers, all.